Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, March 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk craft beer and brewing. We welcome back Rick Davidson of Davidson Brothers in Glens Falls, New York, John Fisher of the brewery at the CIA in Langley, Virginia, and Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works in Malton, New York. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. We have a house full of brewers, and they will, if you're a home brewer, and who isn't nowadays, right? They'll give you some tips. If not, we'll shoot the breeze. 800-348-2551, Rick Davidson, Erica Anderson, John Fisher. We'll roll out the barrel and take your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk beer today on the program, and we have some great brewers with us. Joining us is Rick Davidson of Davidson Brothers Restaurant at Brewery in Glens Falls, New York. Since 1996, it has been a destination for great micro-brewed ale and stout and IPAs. Love them. Also with us is our pal John Fisher of the Culinary Institute of America. The brewery at the CIA, an educational microbrewery at the Hyde Park campus, was named New York State Brewery of the Year for 2019. It's 23 now. Let's find out what happened in the intervening years. We also welcome for the first time Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works in Malta, New York. Since opening in 2018, Unified Beer Works has gained a reputation for great hazy IPAs, fruited sours, lagers, stouts, and saison. If you have a question about beer or brewing, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. I'll give the number and the email address dozens of times throughout the show. Let's meet now the newcomer, Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works. How are you? Thanks for coming.
I am fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Boy, you made it here by the skin of your teeth.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Albany today.
You got the March Madness, and there's road closures here and there, but you made it, and thank you so much for coming. I have not been to Unified Beer Works yet. What I've seen on the website looks amazing. Tell us about how you got into this. This is a husband and wife team.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you fall into brewing?
So honestly, my husband and I had been in our corporate jobs for quite a long time, and we were both becoming fairly disengaged with corporate world, and we wanted to branch out and do our own thing. And we sort of stumbled across craft brewing because I got him, he always likes to put air quotes on that one, I got him for Christmas a brewing kit back in 2015.
Yeah.
We both brewed the first batch together, and we both fell in love with the process.
Ah,
so,
did you do well your first time out?
Actually, we actually did somehow.
1987, I bought a brewing kit. Brewing kit.
Okay.
And it was the worst. I won't even say what it tasted like, but it was very, very bad.
What was it supposed to be?
Some kind of beer. I don't know.
Okay.
Very young.
Something with alcohol.
Yeah,
all right.
It tasted cidery with terrible fizz. It was awful. We'll learn more about what you do over there as we get into the show, but we'll also interview, John Fisher of the Culinary Institute, our buddy. He is here a few times a year, and we booze it up. John, how you doing?
Doing pretty darn well. How are you?
Pretty good. Can you elaborate a little bit?
There's nothing really that new. Last time you made fun of me for referring to a sake brewery that wasn't open yet.
Oh, is it open?
No.
All right. I guess I can keep going then. All right, fine.
But there, I think the first test batch is going in the tanks, they've spent a lot of money on that project.
Yeah.
I mean, the first budget I heard was $27 million, went to $30 immediately.
Wow.
And I've heard that they're up to $68
for sake.
Million.
Holy moly.
Now, this is a corporate and college collaboration, yeah?
In a way. We don't have any ownership. We'd signed a letter of agreement with them that we're going to essentially be their voice to the public.
Yeah.
And convincing Americans to drink sake with American food. And at one meeting, I said, we're not allowed to use the word sushi and sake in the same sentence anymore. Because we want... How often do Americans eat sushi? And actually, Americans eat sushi more than Japanese do. But we want there to be a sake for meatloaf and a sake for mac and cheese and a sake for chili dogs. And there are. Mm. There are sake that are all over the map flavor-wise. And so Dasai, the brand of the sake, is produced by Asahi Shuzo. It's like saying Anheuser-Busch makes Budweiser. Asahi Shuzo makes Dasai sake.
Okay.
So we signed a letter of agreement that we're going to be working with them to help people to start drinking more sake.
Nice. Anything beer related?
It is beer.
Sake is beer?
Yeah. It's fermented grain.
There's not a lot of fizz, and it's not, I usually drink it warm, but I know
it's
there's
still
other kinds.
Beer.
All right, fine. All right. Well, you brought something. Let's have a toast, and then we'll introduce
Saint Patrick's
Rick Davidson.
Day, and Fisher doesn't sound Irish, but Mary Ellen Mahoney does, and that was my mother's name. And so, Aaron Gilbrah, happy St. Patty's Day. A little Bushmills Black Bush.
Love it.
Nice.
Bushmills is the oldest whiskey distillery in the world.
Okay.
1608.
Thank you.
Down the hatch. Yo, that's good booze. All right. Rick Davidson from Davidson Brothers. Last time you were on for a beer show, it was your 26th birthday. Not you. You might be a little.
It was his 24th.
You might be a little older than that. But it was Davidson Brothers, 26th. And there's another anniversary today. How weird is that?
Is this amazing? 27 years ago today, we announced we were doing a brew pub in Glens Falls.
And you announced this to whom?
To the public for the first time.
Oh, all right.
We didn't tell our family until 2 days before St. Patrick's Day.
Really?
It was on a Sunday.
How'd you keep that secret quiet?
It's quite the surprise.
Well, it was quite a surprise. My poor, God rest her soul, mother. That almost put her in. She says, "But you don't know how to make beer, and you don't know how to cook, and you've never owned a business." And we said, "Well, yeah, we'll find somebody."
And your beer is great, though, man.
It's worked out well.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good indeed. And John is handing things out here.
I love being on with John. I just want to say, Ray, anytime you invite me, if John's on, I am here.
All right.
$5 goes a long way.
Will you be here for the sake show?
Oh.
That's the question.
I want to come for the sake show. I got to see how they spent this $60 million.
Yeah, it's expensive. Very expensive sake. The number here is 800-348-2551. As we get rolling, we'll probably have a sip here, and then we'll take a break and hit the phones. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. One of the fun things about having John Fisher of the Culinary Institute on my programs is that he pretty much sets it all up. We have a list of beers here. I'm not going to read them, but you have curated the beer selection today. You've done a lot of groundwork, for which I'm not paying you. What are we drinking first?
Okay, this is arguably the lightest beer that we're going to be tasting today, which is why it's the first one. And this is the Mise en Place Wit, which people have trouble pronouncing at beer events because they look at it on the sign and they say, Mise en Place.
Mise en Place.
Whereas cooking students know Mise en Place. Mise en Place is getting your stuff together in one sock before you start cooking. So Mise en Place is basically the major tenet of the Culinary Institute of America. It teaches you mise en place in life. It teaches you mise en place in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So mise en place is the name of this beer because it refers to the beer you would have in your lowboy as a cook to have your post-shift beer at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. It was named by the president of the college, actually, by Tim Ryan. And so this is a Belgian wit. So Belgian wheat beer made with coriander seed and orange peel.
And you can
bitter
smell
and sweet
that.
Orange. You should be able to.
It's beautiful. Well, I had the COVID way back when, and now it's the sense of smell is coming back.
Senses
but
are
this
back.
Is the for beer that worse. Got a gold medal at the Governor's Cup, which is why we were named Brewery of the Year in 2019.
Yeah.
It's all been downhill since.
No.
Come on.
No, this is outstanding.
But this is this was actually decided on by Garrett Oliver, the brewmaster of Brooklyn Brewing. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn Brewery is our major donor. They paid for our brew house, and they still support us with information and visits. So this was, Garrett said, this should be your year-round light beer.
I love this beer.
The beer that goes with food. Hutch always says it is like the perfect brunch beer. Think of this with like Eggs Benedict or an omelet or something. And it also is now finally available wholesale. We're selling our beers through Craft Beer Guild in New Paltz, and we have this, and a little bit later on, we're going to have our Cleaver IPA. We like our cooking puns.
Cleaver. Oh, this has nothing to do with Leave It to Beaver.
No.
Okay.
No.
Fine.
That seems so strange. I don't know why that would be.
Well, the best we ever had was a Scottish ale, the best name. And, you know, the Scotch ales are sometimes called Wee Heavies. Mm-hmm. So ours was called Wee Chef.
See? They have a sense of humor at the CIA.
Really? Hilarious stuff.
It's all the heat.
Let's take a break here, and then we'll get to the phones, and maybe somebody will be even funnier than that. We'll find out. 800-348-2551 is the number. Beer Brewing. We'll be back. Count Basie here on Vox Pop. It's beer show, so it's St. Patrick's Day, so why not play more Count Basie? I love Count Basie. I'm not that fond of the Irish music, to be honest with you. And all... Sorry, Zach, the engineer.
Uh-oh.
Also, I don't really think I knew it was St. Patrick's Day when I booked this months ago. I just... did I, Rick?
No, you did not.
I just threw it on the calendar.
Did not.
Man, semi-professional radio. It's always my motto. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's beer and brewing today. Rick Davidson from Davidson Brothers, Erica Anderson from Unified Beer Works, and John Fisher from the Culinary Institute, award-winning several years ago. And the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. What's the second beer here? And then we'll take calls.
All right, so now we have, this is Unified Beer Works, Feel Ooh. As One Sour. So this is
a little bit
of a swing from what we just had, which was nice and crisp and clean, very beautiful wit. So this is our take on a nice, light, easy drinking sour. It is conditioned on tangerine and strawberries. This is actually our flagship sour, so you can drink it literally any time of year, but it is especially delicious on a hot summer day.
When
sitting on our patio.
When you say conditioned, what are you talking about? You just throw them in the barrel?
Well, so most of us use fruit puree, either whole fruit or fruit puree. Unified, we only use real fruit, so no extracts or anything of that nature, which is part of why it tastes so good. So basically we put that fruit right in the tank and let it hang out and get its groove on, get its mojo going. And
got
yeah.
the mojo working.
Oh,
well, let
yeah.
me tell you something.
This is the ultimate brunch beer, I think, too.
It kind of
depends on what way you're going. If you like fruity, this is a good brunch beer.
I've not been a huge fan of sours over the years. This is by far my favorite. I mean, this
Thank
is
you.
Fabulous stuff. Fisher, what do you think?
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I think it's great. And also, Ray, you should know, it's kind of dangerous to use fresh fruit in making a fruit beer.
Why?
Because of the yeast and bacteria that are living on the skins of the fresh fruit. That's why most brewers use fruit puree that comes out of a carton.
You should take the skins off.
That's where the flavor is. Most of the tangerine flavor in a tangerine is in the oils and the peel. Lemon juice doesn't taste like lemon lifesavers or lemon mm-hmm. lollipops.
Yeah.
That lemon flavor that you expect is in the oil, is in the lemon oil.
Rick, do you agree with that, Rick Davidson?
I do agree with that.
Really?
That's why I do not and never have brewed with fruit. It's seriously because I would only use real fruit, mm-hmm. and it's a big, big challenge.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely a challenge. Also freezing fruit. So freezing fruit is great because it helps bring out a lot of sugars.
Yeah.
And it emphasizes a lot of the nuances of that fruit.
And potentially kills the bacteria and yeast.
Absolutely.
But doesn't
yes.
the brewing process kill the bacteria?
Not if you add the fruit in the fermenter.
Correct.
Fermentation side is called the cold side.
Yep.
You mash, you lauter and sparge. You put it in the carrel where you boil it with hops and sometimes fruit. Our wit beer gets its flavoring in the kettle, but most fruit beers, it happens on the cold side, which is where, you know, bacteria can. There is such a thing as psychrophilic bacteria, which grow in cold. So.
You're a professor. You know what? Stop showing off.
Seriously,
right?
That's why I'm here. To learn from him.
To learn from him, Rick Davis.
Oh, come on.
All right, let's grab
saving the tuition.
Before we have our next taste, let's have a caller here who's been waiting quite a while. Elizabeth in Rockaway, you're on.
Hi. I've been doing some research on fermentation of vegetables because supposedly they have really good probiotics.
Yeah.
And then I see that beer is also a fermentation process.
Yes.
And I was wondering how they were different in terms of what the product is, in terms of the if there are probiotics, and are there any probiotics in beer, or is it heated to destroy anything that's in it before they produce it?
So who wants this one?
So I actually do all of the sour brewing within our brewery, and the vast majority of our sour beers are produced with a bacteria called Lactobacillus, which is a probiotic. A lot of home brewers would actually use yogurt to
live culture yogurt.
Yeah, to actually sour their beers.
Really?
Oh yeah. However, once you get to the point of reaching your pH, which is that perceived sourness, that tartness that you get a lower pH, that acidity, you want to actually kill off those bugs. So you will wind up pasteurizing it. So you kill everything, as you said, during that heat process. And then it goes forward through the rest of the brewing process where you introduce the regular brewing yeast. The Saccharomyces.
So actually, you start out with the same Lactobacillus, and actually the Lactobacillus from the yogurt, but then it doesn't have probiotic because then you pasteurize it.
That's correct, yeah. So the end process would not have that.
And the fermented vegetables only get Lactobacillus, whereas the main fermentation in beer is alcoholic fermentation with Saccharomyces cerevisiae or Pasteurianus.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call. John, is there any chance that the CIA brewery will do a vegetable beer anytime in the future?
I don't remember using a vegetable per se. We have done a good number of fruited sours. And by the way, fruited sour is one of the most popular styles in craft beer today. It's not surpassing IPA, but it's up there.
Beets, by the way, are kind of amazing in sours.
Beets? No.
Erica. Oh, yes. No. They're so good. Listen,
and
they're
the
so polarizing. I don't understand why. I personally love them. That's why.
Yeah, they taste like sweet dirt, which I like.
Sweet
Same.
Dirt. That's the name of the next beer.
The beer.
Yeah, that's right.
Sweet
over at Unified
dirt.
Beer Works.
I guarantee it's been used already.
You
Every
think so?
Probably.
Been used.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all right. That was interesting. Now let's go to Rosendale. And Mark, you're
let's
on.
Go for the Franken.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question is, my partner and I use acorns from oak trees for a lot of different food things, and including roasting them to make sort of a coffee or coffee ice cream flavor.
Are you a squirrel, sir?
yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I was wondering if
no
we
one
were
knows
thinking
if you're a squirrel
about
on the internet.
A lot of acorns because they're very starchy and they have a lot of tannic acid, which I know sometimes hops adds to beer, but any thoughts on that or if you see any obvious complications?
Well, the hops only get tannic if they get overboiled, and you pick up some of those phenolics. As for and you're talking about acorns, right? Very bitter. I remember one time we made a soda at the culinary. We made acorn soda, but using acorn tincture, not using actual acorns.
What the blue blazes?
So we served it in the New York Public Library, actually.
Really?
Yeah. As part of a big cocktail event.
Do you want to use my leaves from last fall? Turns to make one.
But I honestly, I think the only good culinary use of acorns is the one they feed to pigs in Spain.
Ah.
To make jamón ibérico, which is the most amazing ham on the planet.
Mark, we kind of strayed from beer. We're on to ham now. Do you want to follow up?
No, I appreciate it. And I appreciate that information about hops. I didn't know that.
All right, well, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Beer and Brewing Today. Rick Davidson of Davidson Brothers, 26 years old, but 27 years ago they made their announcement that they were going to be a thing. They're in Glens Falls, New York, and Rick is a great guest on this program. Also a great guest is John Fisher of the Culinary Institute. They won an award at the best brewery
New York State,
New York?
New York State craft brew competition.
That's amazing. So that was three or four years ago.
Three or four years ago, and we won the governor. No, we didn't win Governor's Cup because we didn't get the best beer of the year, but our scores made us the highest scoring brewery out of all of the competing craft breweries.
There was a Governor's Cup.
The Governor's Cup used to be awarded at the Tap Beer Festival, and now it's awarded by – actually, I was just up in Rochester two, 3 weekends ago judging it. We had 1,332 beers to judge.
Wow. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Me. Just me.
It's amazing.
Rick and Erica
Anderson. We'll be at the awards ceremony next week.
Yeah, next week in Albany. The awards ceremony is in Albany next week.
At the Craft Beer Festival. What time?
I don't know. It's evening, right?
Yeah,
it's like call it around 6 p.m.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to be at the 35th anniversary party for Brooklyn Lager in Brooklyn
that'll be fun.
So, yeah.
Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works in Malta, New York, is a first timer on this program, and I believe this is one of yours we have.
Indeed it is, yes.
What do we got here?
So, actually, this is one of my husband's beers. Jeff has taken over our lager program. We like to embrace the German lagers and a lot of the more obscure styles. So this would fall into that bucket. So this is an Amber Keller beer.
Mm.
So traditionally, it's not your super clear lager. And that is actually the way that an Amber Keller beer would be traditionally served. So it's not conditioned as long as your normal lager, where you cold condition lagers, it lets everything precipitate out of that beer. But this, you still have a little bit of that hazy cloudiness.
Yeah.
But it has a little bit of that delicious caramel note to it, but it finishes super dry. It's nice and light. It's just a beautiful thing to drink for this time of year.
Very tasty.
That's delicious.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
And that's the kind of beer the brewers want to drink.
Exactly.
Are you speaking for all brewers now?
I think he is.
Yeah? All right. So the two in the room agree with him. All right.
I accept that.
100% of the brewers here.
By the way, Rick Davidson, the third beer on the list that John Fisher provided was Your Irish Red.
Yeah, I'm
which
very
was absconded
sorry.
With by Joe Donahue on the way out the door.
But it is St. Patrick's Day.
Fair enough. Right.
Joe could call it in from his car, maybe.
I don't know. I've been phoning it in for years. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2.
I do want to say quickly that we are going to taste beers from Davidson Brothers.
Could we?
They are on the list.
All right.
Whether it's off the air or not, it doesn't matter. We're here all night.
Let's go to Richard in Leeds. You're on. You got to turn the radio down there, buddy. It's going to take a while. Have a sip. All right.
That's the one thing we've got time.
Richard, can you turn your radio down, my friend?
Yes. Okay. Alexa, stop.
Huh.
Okay, hello.
You're on. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a little confused when they use the word beer to describe sake. I understand sake is rice wine, not beer.
Hang on. I'm with you, Richard. John Fisher is trying to get real technical on us. All right, go ahead, John.
Well, first of all... The last time I checked, rice was not a fruit. So wine is fermented fruit, and beer is fermented grain. So not to sound pedantic, sorry, I couldn't help it. Sake technically is a beer.
Well, you seem to be in the minority because everyone else always calls it wine, and its alcohol content is too high to be classified as a beer.
Incorrect.
Oh, you're arguing with the professor now, Richard. Be careful.
Well... Then he needs to do a better job of educating people because everyone I've ever spoke to calls it rice wine. Even my Japanese friends call it rice wine.
But technically, he's talking about the technical nature of how it is produced. I believe that is the case. I like to give John a hard time, but I believe he is he's pretty knowledgeable. That's why we keep bringing him back. But thanks for that one. 800-348-2551. Would you like to follow up? Fisher?
No, I agree that it is the misnomer of calling it rice wine is all over the place. The Americans call it rice wine.
Yeah.
In all different levels of knowledge. The fact is that it's not.
I'm wondering if that comes from the fact that it's not carbonated.
And it's clear.
That's where it came from.
But the other thing, there's a misconception. People think it's distilled. They think it's vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 15 to 18% alcohol. It's a fermented product, not a distilled product. And it is, if you ever had Sam Adams Utopia, the highest alcohol beer in the country.
Right.
It's
How
not
high?
Carbonated.
How high is that?
No.
It's like 20-something?
It's in the 20s. Yeah.
Wait,
it's,
no,
more
I've
like
had,
a, it's more like a cognac. It's
I've had
not,
Thomas Hardy. That had to be more than that, right?
I haven't had that.
The highest you can get with our kind of beer is usually somewhere around maybe 13% ABV.
Mm-hmm.
Sake gets up to 20s, actually, because of the way it's brewed with the multiple parallel fermentation that's called Heiko Fukuhako.
Say that three times fast.
Why don't we do a couple of emails here? This one's from...
Wow, Ray's like, hard pass.
This one's from Ridge.
It doesn't get any better, Ray.
Why does fermenting under pressure cause fermentation to increase and not take as long? What styles of beer should be fermented under pressure? Is mixing yeast strains a good idea? What is the proper... There's a lot of questions. What is the proper way to reuse yeast after fermentation? And how do you store it and preserve it for your next brew? I can go back and give you the...
Yeah, we're going to need repeats
first question.
On the first
yeah,
one,
chop that
on
up.
Those.
Why does fermentation under pressure cause fermentation to increase and not take as long?
I've never heard of that.
No.
I've never heard of a pressure fermenter.
Yeah, no.
All right, next question. What styles of beer should be fermented under pressure?
Again.
You've never...
I mean, it is under pressure because there's carbon dioxide being produced in the tank, but you have a bubbler on it,
yeah.
And the CO2 is releases, escaping,
releases
and it never
pressure.
Gets much above, what, 12 PSI? Well, not in the bright tank. It gets to 12 or 14.
All right.
Or 15,
unless you're doing something funky where you're force carbonating something based on the fermentation.
But that's not fermenting
so.
Then. Then you're carbonating.
Produced, well, right, exactly. So I'm
because the beer gets fermented in a fermenter,
confused by that.
And then it goes into what's called the bright tank,
right?
Which is where it's carbonated and set, and that's where you package from.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not fermentation going on there. The beer's getting finished.
Since there are so many questions here, we'll do this like an English game show, and we'll throw this one
buzzers?
To you, Rick Davidson.
Oh, mouth?
Ding.
Is mixing yeast strains a good idea?
Not Rick, for me. No, because, you know, I'm a British-style brewer, so I use basically the same yeast. For the first 22 years, we used Ringwood yeast, which came from the Ringwood Brewery in England. And, you know, we're open-top fermentation, so we just crop. And to get to one of the last questions was, how do we save it? Well, in our the way we do it is you crop what's off the top. When the fermentation is done, you put it in a sanitized container, you put it in a cooler.
Wow.
And basically you're saving the yeast, and you just take that the next day, next 2 days you brew, and you put some warm wort in it, and you're off and running again. But, yeah, we have to be very careful at Davidson's. If we ever do an oddball and we're using a different yeast, we're not in that fermentation room with the open-top fermenters with the Ringwood yeast. Mm. We're not in there at the same time.
Erica,
you're building a population of yeast
right.
in that room.
In that room.
You agree, Erica?
Yeah, absolutely. The conditions that you have built in your brewery, if you introduce any other kind of yeast, it'll be like, hey, we're here to party.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a rave down the corner.
Correct.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Guess what? It's going to taste really weird.
And generally, it doesn't turn out well.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's a direct question for Mr. Davidson from Philip. As a former QC club member, what's that?
Quality Control Department.
And fellow SUNY Binghamton alum, I think it's important that Rick explain his quality guarantee, i.e. what happens if someone gets a beer they don't like.
Oh,
I did not hear about this.
Oh, well, we. Oh, my God, Phil. Wow, Binghamton, that's going back a ways. Well, the deal is, of course, we stand behind every beer. So if anybody ever gets a beer that we brew that they don't like, I'll finish it for them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll still let them pay for it.
Of
I'm
course.
Not going to insult
good
them.
For you. That's good.
But
that
goes
fair.
Everywhere we brew. And Phil knows the guarantee. He never took me up on it, the freaking guy. He figured if he's paying for the beer, he'd drink it.
Thank you for saying freaking. Let's have one more sip of something new, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones again. It's Beer and Brewing today on Food Friday, 800-348-2551. What have we here?
This is our Equinox Vienna Lager from the Culinary. It is actually, I just mentioned before, Brooklyn Brewery, Brooklyn Lager. That's what Brooklyn Lager is. It's a Vienna Vienna Lager. So it is cold fermented. It's an amber beer, but it is made to be crisp like the Keller beer from Unified. And this was a one-off that I'm pretty sure we made with an experimental grain.
What do you mean an experimental grain? Something from, you know, not Chernobyl or something? What are we talking about here?
From underneath the power lines.
Okay.
You will not grow a third eye.
No, it was I'm not sure if this is one. We did make the first beer ever from an experimental grain, experimental barley developed by Cornell. They're working on barley strains that can be grown in New York State more efficiently. And we got a small batch that was actually malted at Hudson Valley Malt down in Germantown.
Uh-huh.
By
Those
Dennis,
guys are awesome.
Dennis and Jeanette.
Yep.
They're just wonderful people and great maltsters, floor malting the old way. And so we got that first batch and we made a beer with that experimental grain. I think that might be some of that in here because one of them is called Equinox, I think. Anyway, it's a Vienna lager.
All right.
Cheers.
Prost.
Oh, got real quiet.
That's outstanding.
Well, that's a good beer.
Oh, I like it. Me likey.
Yeah.
That's nice. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Beer and Brewing on Food Friday. Erica Anderson is here from Unified Beer Works. Rick Davidson is here from Davidson Brothers. And John Fisher from the Culinary Institute Brewery. We'll be back. Government Mule with John Schofield on guitar here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. We're having quite a nice time, a funk good time, as James Brown would say, with the brewers, Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works in Malta, Rick Davidson of Davidson Brothers in Glens Falls, John Fisher of the Culinary Institute, the brewery at the CIA, an educational microbrewery, was named New York State Brewery of the Year several years ago. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's go to the phones, and then we'll go to our next next one. Let's, Jonathan, you're on. Not.
Did you say Jonathan?
Yeah, that's you, man. Go.
Hey, Jonathan.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you were characterizing sake as a beer. So my question is, would you characterize soju or shochu as a beer and not as distilled spirit?
Okay, now if you're going to be picking at nits, technically shochu or soju, since it's a distilled rice beer, would be a whiskey.
No
it
way.
Would, it would be moonshine. It would be unaged, distilled fermented grain. So I never thought of that before, but yeah, and it's usually much lower in ABV than our whiskeys, like the one we started with. It is usually in the 20s, 25, 30. But yeah, I guess technically it would be a whiskey, an unaged whiskey. I mean,
oh, okay, yeah, because the soju from barley has a very whiskey-like character.
Yeah, you just reminded me. Soju isn't always made from grain. Sometimes it's made from sweet potatoes and other stuff. So soju and shochu can be made from anything that will bubble when yeast hits it. But it has to be a starch source and not a fruit, I think. I don't think there's, like, grape soju, but I don't know.
It sounds delicious. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for the call. This email from Phil. As a Brit now living here, why, and yes, I love many of the local craft beers, can't any brewery brew Brit-style mild or bitter beers as a norm? Rick, what do you think of that question?
Rick does it all the time.
I do it, but I'm old school. And Phil and I are like a different demographic. You know, like we were saying, sours are hot. I personally think the sake idea is just going to explode. You can do so much. There's so much more that we can do than what we're used to with really a fairly limited menu of products that came out of, you know, Great Britain and open top fermentation and use the same yeast and the same grains and hops. So it's very different than it was even 25 years ago when we started.
I'll throw this out to the panel. And I used to love Boddington Bitters when I was a young man.
Good beer.
Yep,
what, good beer.
What does it take to make a bitter? Why is it just not a regular ale or beer?
It is. Well, it's got more bittering hops, and you put the hops at the beginning of the boil instead of the end, which is how you flavor IPAs, like the one that's in front of us that we should taste soon. But the English beers, which were the center of American craft brewing in the 80s, when I first started drinking craft beers and went into the restaurant business, a lot of them are coming back. A lot of brewers want to drink mild, English mild, British mild. And it's a light, easy drinking ale, and it's not going to rip your tongue out with hops, and it's not going to confuse you with trying to figure out what fruit flavors and marshmallows and graham crackers are.
Now, you know, that sounded very snobby. I got to be honest with you. But Boddington's, one thing I don't like about it, and this is true of several beers that come across the pond, they have the nitrogen pellet in them, and I cannot stand the tiny foamy bubbles.
Well, that's the way it tastes over there.
Well, then I don't
that's
like it.
That's how they serve it over there.
They're just trying to duplicate.
You shouldn't go.
They're just trying to duplicate.
Don't go.
Stay here.
Yeah, all right. They really are.
Stay really?
They're trying to duplicate the way it really is. Yeah.
And is it successful? You've been over there.
No, I have never been over there.
Really?
My mentor is from there, and our brewery was made over there, but I haven't had the opportunity because I'm too busy making beers. Wait to get back to Phil. Hang on. Maybe these good British beers are more popular than I thought because I'm busy all the time.
Aha! Rick Davidson is here from Davidson Brothers.
I'm so confused.
Erica Anderson of Unified Beer Works in Malta, and John Fisher of the CIA. What have we here? And then we'll go back to the phones.
Okay, so this is all the juicy things.
Ooh,
so
that's
literally
a big popular thing.
Should taste like everything you could think of.
Smells like grapefruit.
Tastes like juice. So this is our flagship hazy New England style IPA. And my husband is also in charge of this one. This is one of the beers that he came up with literally in our garage. And has just perfected the recipe time after time and keeps tweaking and dialing and whatever. But, yeah, this is our hands-down biggest seller.
So we should call
this... You
look
very confused, Rick.
No, I'm not. I have a question, though. It does taste so juicy. There's no juice. This is all
zero
hops,
fruit.
Right?
This is all hops.
And so how do you make that happen?
Yeah. That is the beauty of brewing these hazy IPAs is there are so many nuances with the hops and playing with temperatures and fermentation and biotransformation, which is, you know, something that happens during fermentation. It's a very specific time during fermentation, and then you add hops carefully because otherwise you might get a little bit of a CO2 explosion.
Mentos and Diet Coke.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Precisely. And there's look it up on Google. You'll see some really fun videos of exploding fermenters, like literally volcano mode.
So we should call this beer All the Hops Everywhere All at Once.
I think this will win some awards.
As timely as today's headlines. Well done.
You should trademark that. Like ASAP, do it.
So that's very nice. That's a great beer.
Somebody in Radioland probably just got it.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It is The Beer Show and Brewing Today with John Fisher and Erica Anderson and Rick Davis. We'll go to Nick in Woodstock. Nick, you're on. Hello, Nick.
Oh, hello. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
What's up, man?
So I'm brewing Scooby for
Scooby?
Kombucha.
Okay.
Yeah, the
kombucha?
Scooby is the kombucha. Yeah. So my question is, I have one shout out to Rick Orlando because I just dug out his John George cookbook from like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
There's two pictures of him. But where does the fermentation of kombucha and beer meet? Because naturally it is alcohol, yes? Or
I don't know.
There is a little bit of alcohol in kombucha. Well, it depends. But there is a little bit that gets produced during fermentation.
Is it saccharo?
No, that's lactobacillus.
And lactobacillus doesn't make a lot of alcohol.
No.
It's mostly lactic acid.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
And carbon dioxide.
Yep.
All right, Nick, thank you very much. 800-348-2551. Rick and John were whispering during the call. What were you whispering about?
We're going straight to Cleaver because we forgot the classic IPA has been spoken for.
Well, can we do a Davidson Brothers beer on the show? I mean, we haven't done that.
We can.
No, right?
Donahue stole the red ale that was third.
And you've got the IPA. I've got
it's at your desk. Yeah.
Oh.
No, really? Listen. Here's the thing. I'm here to enjoy myself, remember?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how's that working out for you?
I'm having a good time.
All right, this email from Alex. Do any of you have any way to determine IBU contribution in the Whirlpool and or dry hop? Most recipe software does not calculate much, but I'm guessing there is some. What's with the Whirlpool? I have no idea what he's talking about. Erica?
So Whirlpool is something that comes into play when you are toying around with hops and hop flavor. A lot of that comes in with the hazy IPAs for sure.
Yep.
And different temperatures. So if you throw a specific hop into a boil, you're going to get bitterness, basically. Not necessarily tons of flavor, but Whirlpool, where you're doing something at a much lower temperature, so like call it maybe 160 to 180, because ideally you're not going to want to introduce any bacteria into your wort. Those are the temperatures where you're just going to be getting some beautiful aromas and flavors from those hops. So something like, you know, all the juicy things, that's where you would get all of that from.
Mm-hmm.
And just to clarify for the brewing muggles out there, the Whirlpool happens in the kettle where there's a jacuzzi jet that spins the liquid around, spins the wort around. And what that does is it forms a cone of, it's called trub, but it's the flocculated proteins.
I'm sorry.
It's a clean word.
Okay.
And hops. They make a cone in the bottom, like when you stir your iced tea with the sugar granules, they make a little cone in the bottom. So that trub collects in the bottom. That is the activity of it's clarification, essentially. It's almost like a filtration in a way, but it also happens at a cooler temperature at the end of the process of boiling, which will extract fewer bittering properties from the hops. If you add hops at the beginning of the boil, all you get is bitterness.
Correct.
If you add it in the middle, you get both hops and bitterness. And if you add it at the end, you get only flavor because the bitterness is in resins that need to be boiled, like rosemary leaves. If the flavors are in oils, aromatic oils that dissipate like fresh basil. So if you do it in the middle, you get both bitterness and flavor.
Okay.
And depending on when you add the hops during the boil, you get varying levels of flavor and aroma and bitterness.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. You know, I always thought brewers were cool, but you're all geeks. That's the bottom line, aren't you?
No doubt.
I mean, I used to be a computer programmer, so.
Aha!
Was a geek. That's the best explanation.
My husband
I've
ever was
heard.
A biologist.
Can you do a beer called Fortran?
Every semester.
It's so easy.
Sure.
That would be good. This email from Roy. Element Brewing makes a great IPA that they call Sake Plasma because they use rice, buckwheat, etc., but it tastes great. It's gluten-free.
Either of these.
Nobody listened to what I just read from
They call it sake.
You know what? We're going to move on. All right. What beer is this?
This is our Cleaver IPA.
All right. This is from the CIA brewery.
Yes, it is.
All right.
And it's one of the other ones that we sell through CBG. So.
And this, again, is a tribute to Leave It to Beaver.
Mm. Correct.
Correct? Here we go.
Sure.
That's so good.
But this is a West Coast IPA.
Stop right there, John Fisher. Erica mentioned a New England IPA. It's all over the place. Anytime you go to the grocery store, they have 27 different IPAs that are New England style. Tell me, okay.
Hazy clear.
This is radio.
So I know.
We're going to ask John. She's
really?
Holding up two cups. John, explain the difference between
West. I tried to help by pointing. They couldn't hear that?
Explain the difference between West Coast and New England.
West Coast is old school, not an OG. East Coast, original East Coast IPA, which is closer to the kinds that Rick makes, are the English style, which no one in this country would recognize as an IPA. They would think it was just like a pale ale, like
right.
you know, Brooklyn Lager or something, mm-hmm. which is a lager. But West Coast IPA is hoppier with more bitterness.
So this was Anchor Steam back in the day?
Well, Anchor is a steam beer, which is a California common, so that's technically not an IPA. Their IPA is called Liberty Ale.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a little bit stronger. It's got a little bit more bitterness. It has a lot of hop presence, but it's, as you can see, clear. I mean, this is bright as day. You can read the paper through this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, the hops and the malt are balanced, but it does have, the reason that we were going to use Rick's IPA first is because his, I'm assuming, is a little bit less prominent
yeah,
hop.
It's 44 IBUs.
Right.
You know, and I think when we came out with it, we were the only IPA in this market in 1996. And people thought it was way too bitter.
Really?
Well,
you were ahead of the game.
Oh, it was like when I first tasted Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. No, he got his. He got his.
Oh, you have this one.
So when I first tasted Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, I thought it was so bitter, like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not. It's an amazing beer. It's a desert island beer for me.
It's good beer.
But
it's a great beer.
But this is, you know, this Cleaver IPA, this is another one of our year rounds because this is like cheeseburger beer. You know, it was made for a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Right up your alley, Ray.
How'd you know? All right, what are we drinking here? We only have a minute and 45 seconds.
We finally have Rick's beer.
It's the Davidson Brothers, Rick and John's Scotch Ale, because Davidsons are Scotch. You know, we're from Scotland.
This is strong.
And this is 9.4%.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
But, you know, a Scotch Ale it's just all grain, very little hops. You stuff that mash tun as full as you can get it. And you only end up with about half of a regular batch of beer.
I used to drink McAndrew back in the day. This McAndrew Scotch Ale is nice.
And it certainly has its following. My wife likes it after a day working in the restaurant with me.
Really?
Two pints.
It anesthetizes her? Well, what do you say?
You know, cannabis is legal now.
Yeah, it is.
No, that's very good. Oh, my gosh. It's so strong, though.
Delicious.
You definitely, you don't get it in the taste that it's strong, but you can feel it on the tongue that it's strong.
It's body too. It's a
mm-hmm.
lot of body.
Yeah.
It's you know, you're not drinking a lot of it.
All right. Well, we're about out of time here. Hey, Rick Davidson, how do people find you in person and on the web at Davidson Brothers?
In person is so easy. 184 Glen Street, Glens Falls, 27 years. On the web, it's davidsonbrothers.com.
Well, we wish you another 27.
Thank you. I'll be there.
All right, Erica Anderson, how do we find Unified?
Oh, my goodness. So head your way up the Northway in between exits 11 and 12. So if you're coming down from skiing or if you're heading up from the city, we're very conveniently located 5 minutes off the Northway. Look for us on Unified Beer Works on Instagram and Facebook and unified-beerworks.com.
You do great work, and we had several people write in saying how great you are. I didn't read them. I didn't want to give you a swell head on the air, but several people
Not the first time.
Yeah, it's your first.
John Fisher, how do people get to the CIA?
Practice. Right.
That's
CIAchef.edu or CIA Restaurant Group. Just Google CIA Restaurant Group. Our brew pub is open this semester.
Oh, nice.
Until April.
We're getting back to real world again. That's nice to hear. Well, both of you brewers who are commercially involved, today's a big day. It's St. Patty's Day. I appreciate you being here. Fisher?
What?
Beautiful job. Thank you for being here. Support comes from the Locavore Market, Red Hook, a neighborhood grocery market with grab and go by Teaspoon. Add new selection of craft New York State brews. And Union Hall Supply Company, serving the Capital Region with curated selection of men's apparel, accessories, and in-store tasting craft beer bar. UnionHallSupplyCo.com. All right, that's it for the week, and thank you all for being with us on Vox Pop Food Friday. Thanks to everybody who called in and the email. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Barb King screened your calls. I'm Ray Graff. We'll see you on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Have a splendid and safe weekend.